All right. Yeah, the listeners are sort of missing out on the smellscape. So we're looking over what effectively looks like a massive Olympic swimming pool full of bacteria. The noises in the background, you can hear aeration, air being passed through what we call the activated sludge, which is the stuff in the swimming pools that's cleaning up the water.
Tell us about what you're going to do today.
Okay, so we're just going to take 4 litres of the sludge from this pool here. We're going to put that sludge, which is made up of bacteria, into these bottles. We'll just take them back to the lab and we'll start using them in experiments. Going to get your hands dirty?
Hell yeah.
I imagine surgical gloves are an essential part of the kit when you're doing this kind of work.
Yeah. With around 1 billion cells per milliliter of the water that we're sampling, you don't want to get too much of it on you.
And what's the process? I mean, we're standing above, as you said earlier, an Olympic-sized swimming pool of this sludge. How do you actually get the sample?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. Sydney Water have invested in a brand new bucket for us with a rope attached to it. And we'll dip that down into the water and bring it up and tip it into the bottles.
It's very high tech here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Everyone's backing away from the swinging bucket of sludge. Has there ever been any unfortunate accidents with a swinging bottle of sludge, Mark?
Not that I've been involved in.
We'll try to keep that record intact today then.
The bacteria that make up these churning, swirling pools of sludge like to live together in clumps that are otherwise known as flocks. And if they didn't, human civilization as we know it wouldn't exist. You're listening to Off Track on RN with me, Joel Werner. And this is the St Mary's Wastewater Treatment Plant in Western Sydney. If it weren't for these bacterial flocks, then none of the water purification that occurs here would be possible. Associate Professor Mike Mainfield studies how these bacterial clumps form, and he's here today to sample some of the sludge.
There's our babies.
You've done that before, Mike. That was rather expert.
Thanks, Joel. I've been coming here for about 3 years now, I think. Joel, can you see the water sort of partition there? So the whole magical thing about activated sludge is that the bacteria live in these little clumps. What happens over time? You can see the actual flocks, they're called, starting to separate from the water. And if they don't do that, then you can't decant off the clean water.
Yeah,
so that's crucial. The formation of those flocks is a really essential component of the process. See, it's starting to separate.
So there's a clear film of liquid in an otherwise brown, sludgy bottle that you've just sampled.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole wastewater treatment thing, you know, globally, it's so important to us. The whole thing works because it's so low tech. You have to be able to settle the bacteria out from the water to get the clean water.
And that's happened in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, so yeah, in a few more minutes, it'll be down to here and you'll have that much clean water to decant off. If we keep it still enough.
In terms of the toxicity of this sludge, if you fell in or if I fell in, wouldn't be pleasant. I know that just by looking at it, but I mean, how bad for you would it be?
Well, I mean, we have to remember that we are a holobiont. So in our gastrointestinal tract, we have more microbial cells than we have human cells in our entire body. We're covered in microbes and we've evolved with microbes. We're very much living in a microbial planet. We're kind of guests here. They've been here for billions of years and we're much more recent than that. But if you fell in there, assuming you didn't have a drink of it or take too much into your stomach or into your lungs, if you had a quick shower afterwards, you'd probably be all right.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
All cleaned up?
Yep, absolutely. It's important not to become too cavalier with the whole thing.
I almost don't want to know the answer to the question, but can you tell us what the sludge is?
So the sludge is a lot like yogurt. It's not so bad. Sure, it smells like poo, but it contains around 10 to the 9 cells or 1 billion cells per milliliter of mostly bacterial cells, but also archaeal cells and fungal cells. And these are all grown up on the nutrients that we flush down our toilets, that we put down the drains from our sinks and our showers. and the nutrients in that water come here. And essentially what the wastewater treatment plant does is feed those nutrients to bacteria and then separate the bacteria from the water, and then the water can go into the natural waterways. So rather than putting all those nutrients directly into the waterways and growing the bacteria in our natural waterways, we grow them here, and then you can separate them out and use those for fertilizer.
So the wastewater here is so nutrient rich that the bacteria, the 10 to the 9 cells per milliliter, are naturally occurring.
Yeah, that's right. So these plants aren't inoculated. These populations and communities of bacteria, they just grow up naturally. You know, it's a process that's been going on for a long time. It was sort of mastered in the early 1900s. And this brown stuff that we see in this massive tank here is called activated sludge. And it's referred to as activated sludge because of the aeration. So you can see the air being bubbled up through the water. That keeps the bacteria happy. That gives them something to respire, something to breathe.
And so tell us about these bacteria, because as you mentioned, you touched on it before when we looked at the sludge you collected in the jar to take back to your lab, but they have a very important property.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not just a billion cells per milliliter floating around independently of each other. Bacteria like to live in clumps. They like to attach to things. The biofilms on our teeth are a nice example. Bacteria like to stick to surfaces and they like to stick to each other. So in this wastewater here, you have the 10 to the 9 cells, not as single cells, but as aggregates or clumps, or we call them flocculates or flocks for short. And these flocks are like little microbial communities that live together and work together to clean up the water.
So individual cells working together as an aggregated unit.
Yeah, that's right. So if you just had single cells floating around in here, it would be very difficult to separate the bacteria from the water. But because they grow in clumps and the whole system is engineered to foster that behavior in the microbes, you can just stand the water still for a while and the sludge or the flocks will settle under gravity, and that way you can decant off the clean water and continue the treatment process and ultimately back into the rivers.
And so that's the next step after this swimming pool of sludge. Is there a still out the back where the clean water rises to the top, the bacteria sink, and then you, I guess, reintroduce the sludge back into this system?
Yeah, that's right. It's called a settling tank, unsurprisingly. And a lot of the bacteria get taken away for waste. There's a process whereby the bacterial biomass is treated and then used as fertilizer in different applications. Some of it, a proportion of it, is fed back into these tanks to keep this system going.
Now talk about the bacteria for a second, because in terms of them living in these clumps, in these aggregated communities, how does that benefit their survival in this type of environment?
Yeah, well, I guess all you have to do is look at human populations in Australia and the way we aggregate into cities and to small towns, you know, larger towns as well. So in each clump or in each flock, there's around anywhere between 10,000 cells to 100,000 cells. So I guess we're talking from towns like Inverell to towns like Tamworth and Dubbo, and each one of these flocks, and we've got to remember there's around 100,000 of them per milliliter, are a bit like a town. And you know, biology tends to organize itself like that, and there are benefits to having partition of labor, of differentiation of expertise. So you'll have certain organisms in the clump that perform a particular process, take out the nitrogen, for example, other organisms that deal with the phosphorus, other organisms that deal really well with the carbon, and other organisms which are just in there having a free ride.
So we're just looking at another one of these sample jars that you're taking back to the lab. And I mean, there's almost maybe fivefold difference in terms of the amount of clear water that's sitting at the top of the sludge now.
Yeah, so you can see the flocks settling down really quickly. This is good quality sludge. The guys here running the plant are doing a great job.
So these are the towns you were speaking about earlier. As they compress here in this sample jar, what's happening to the cells?
Okay, so the flocks are settling down, and each little flock is, as I said, like a little town, and they have their own challenges that they have to face when they're aggregating together like this, similar to the challenges that we face in our cities. Challenges like, how do you get food distributed throughout the community? How do you deal with the waste products that the community is generating? How do you get those out? And that's what we're investigating, this process of aggregate formation and how the aggregate looks after itself. So they don't have distribution networks and supermarkets like we do, obviously, but they have mechanisms which they can distribute food from the outside of the flock where the food is present to inside the flock, and they share their food very well. They're very communal organisms, bacteria, and with their waste products in the center of these aggregates, they can start to suffocate because they've got so many of their clonal brothers and sisters surrounding them that the oxygen can't penetrate these aggregates. So they have mechanisms. It's quite difficult to explain, but the way we respire, the way we generate energy, is to pass electrons to oxygen. these organisms, they run out of oxygen, so they find other things that they can pass their electrons to. And some of this stuff is made by themselves, so they're breathing stuff that they produce to deal with this issue of suffocation and distribution of things that they really need, like food and effectively air.
Can you take us through the actual structure of the flock? Because I think when you're talking about the challenges of the cells that find themselves, say, at the middle of one of these, my mind immediately thinks of a number of different shapes and start thinking, well, which shape would work best? Would a sphere obviously would have the kind of problems you're talking about, whereas maybe some distributed mesh might not have those kind of problems. Is there a uniform way in which these bacterial cells aggregate?
Yeah, that's a great question. Under the microscope, they look a little bit like snowflakes, so they try and maximize their surface area. But a lot of them are seeded around a particle of organic matter. It might be a little piece of chitin. All insects are made of chitin, all crustaceans are made of chitin, fungal cell walls are made of chitin. There's a lot of chitin in this system. And that's one of our experimental models, where if you get a little bit of chitin, then the bacteria will actually start colonizing that surface and start producing these snowflake-like structures that are the flock. So, yeah, one of the keys to their survival and flock living or flock lifestyle is to maximize your surface area so you can exchange nutrients and gases and whatnot as readily as possible.
So you're saying the chitin acts as, I guess, a life raft, an overturned life raft after a shipwreck, where all of the bacteria, once they see the life raft, will swim towards it and jump on board?
Yeah, it's a little bit like that, because there are predators in this system. So there are organisms, protozoa, that run around eating single bacterial cells, and that's part of the selection pressure that drives bacteria onto surfaces because they can avoid being eaten by these predators. But the chitin's also something that they can eat. So they attach to the chitin surface and they use that as a carbon and energy source and develop into the flock. I mean, that's part of the process. You want to break down those particles of organic matter, so the bacteria are grabbing onto that and chewing through those.
So these aggregates are quite fluid in terms of their communities. There's not a lot of, I guess, long-term loyalty for the bacteria that make one aggregate to remain with that clump.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the caveat is if you leave your clump, then you're at mercy of the predators in the system. But like snowflakes, there's no two activated sludge flocks that are alike, and they differ in community composition. Some get taken over by certain types of bacteria, certain species, and other ones have a very even population or community structure where there's everything sort of similarly abundant.
So when you get back to the lab, tell us what you'll do there. Do you get a piece of chitin or something similar to it and watch how the individual cells aggregate, or do you take pre-existing aggregates and study them?
Yeah, it's all about trying to build the ultimate or the perfect aggregate. And we've done a lot of work using chitin as a base structure for bacterial cells to colonize and to produce those flocks. This project that we've sampled for today is actually investigating the role of lipids in that flock formation process. So we're very interested in the role of enzymes called lipases, which break down the lipids that have come into the wastewater treatment system. We're also very interested in the role of bacterial signaling systems or communication systems that they use to coordinate production of these enzymes. So we've discovered that a molecule called acylated homoserine lactones, it's called a quorum sensing molecule, the bacteria produce that and they can determine how many of them are present. And if there's enough of them present, then it makes sense for them to produce a communal pool of enzyme to break down the lipid.
The sludge samples we collected earlier will be analysed by Mike's honours student, Lisa Kretschmer.
These contain huge amounts of biomass cells. As you can see, they're separating, so we have heavy little particles falling down and sort of a clearer water up there, which is what, by the way, would be processed onto the next plant, the clear water. The reason why that's in those formations is the bacteria stuck together and form little flocks. They basically build little cities where they all live together, and they're obviously heavier than the water. For them to do their job, which is, you know, make us clean water to be recycled, they need to break down all the things that is in the wastewater, in the influent, which is chitin, fats, nitrogen, phosphorus, like everything that, you know, we can't really put back into the waterways. So the part that I'm looking at is breaking down fats, which in domestic wastewater we use oil, we fry things, it's quite common. They do that by producing an enzyme, which is lipase, which they send outside of themselves. So it's an extracellular enzyme, it floats around, but because they're in flocks, it's quite close to them. It sort of gets immobilized there, it does its job, and then they can access the products of that enzyme.
So they're farming those products almost?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they have a really, really good life in this system, because they have everything they want, it's a really ripe system for them to talk to each other. Bacteria communicate by a mechanism called quorum sensing. When they change what they do and what they express depending on the responses they get from the other bugs around them. So ultimately, I'm trying to see whether lipase production is influenced by their communication with each other.
From a human perspective,
yeah.
Lipids are great. They're the nice grease on the end of your strip of bacon that makes it tasty. Is a lipid something that's good for a bacterial flock to find in the natural world?
Absolutely, because lipids are a huge carbon source. And if you think about it, bacteria are little sacs with useful stuff in them. That is separated by a bilipid layer. So they need those lipids as part as a food source and also as a construction blocks.
In microbiology, there's been a real revolution over the last 15 or 20 years as a lot of technologies come on board, the computers and all the molecular work, being able to cut and paste bits of DNA and sequence DNA rapidly. So we've found out that there's so much more living in here than we ever could grow before. The traditional microbiology approach of plating things out on petri dishes was only sampling about 1% of the diversity that's present globally. So, you know, we've got the tools now to really look into this whole system in much more detail, and it's really opening up a lot of new phenomena that's going on in the microbial world that we had no idea about before.
Who would have thought an Olympic-sized swimming pool full of brown sludge could be home to such a rich environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's an ecological system. You know, on a micro scale, it's, you know, it's many, many rainforests.
Well, Mike, thanks for bringing us out here today, and good luck with the rest of your work.
Okay, cheers, Joel.